Hi friends, my name is Devin, and welcome to the Bardic Babble podcast, the show where we interview creators about the things that they create. On today's episode, we have one of the most hardworking and humble individuals that I have personally gotten to work alongside, Ivan Van Norman. Ivan is one of the driving forces behind Kids on Bikes, the Alice is Missing RPG, and a few other projects that you might have seen. Don't go anywhere. We've got a lot of interesting stories from Ivan about working in the tabletop RPG industry, as well as a little bit of nostalgia for a show you might have forgotten about. So stay tuned. Today, I have one of the busiest people that I think I have ever met in my entire life. And I'm excited to hear about all of his endeavors. So I'm just going to throw the ball right over to you, Ivan. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's so interesting to hear the busiest man, because it's such a thing I hear all the time. It's like, oh, it's okay, you're so busy, and things are like that. This is 100% my fault, Devin, and I'm so sorry. And I think maybe I overhype my busyness so much, but it's just a lot going on, and I don't know. It's okay though. Okay, I'm telling myself that.
Yeah, I've always heard the saying, it's not that you're busy, you just have a full plate. So
yes, yeah, and it's weird because I mean I feel really fortunate because there's a lot of people who, you know, don't have a lot on their plate right now, and they're being forced into productivity. And I empathize with that. So in many ways, I'm very fortunate that I can have things to do. And I just all I really want to do is just make sure that they're all done well, frankly.
Right. So that's I was gonna skirt around the how'd you get into gaming and everything like that, but I kind of just want to dive right into those projects, your process, and everything like that.
Sure.
So Alice is Missing. I want to start there.
Yes. So we're actually the very moment we're just going through the last little bits of pre-press on it, before it goes off to the printers. But, we're doing a whole bunch to it right now. Alice is Missing. I should probably back up. Alice is Missing is a little indie RPG that, is the sophomore project of Spencer Stark, who got a chance to make Icarus, How Great Civilizations Fall, with us back last year. And Icarus is a pretty awesome little dice-stacking RPG in which you basically build up a civilization in order to watch it fall. And as you generate failures in the game, you slowly, each failure represents a dice that you stack on a dice tower. And when the dice tower falls, thus does the civilization. So Alice is Missing is his second project, in which you're basically using a small deck of cards in order to generate a mystery around this town of Silent Falls up in Northern California, in which your best friend Alice, or maybe not your best friend, it could be your ex-girlfriend, it could be your friend from out of town. There's a lot of different relationships in the game. Alice, and you're trying to find out why she's missing. But the unique hook on it is that all of the communication in the RPG is done just through texting, like messaging services. I mean, phone text is classically the best way to do it, but it could be through any kind of text service imaginable. So we like to call it's the silent role-playing game.
And see, it's interesting that in the same breath, you talked about, Icarus and Alice, which both have insanely unique components, but they're components that have already been at the table. I've built a dice tower myself, and, we've all sent the DM the secret, oh, I want this to happen for my character in the middle of a session.
In the middle of a session. It's true. And it's taking those kind of unique immersive elements and just focusing a game around it. And Spencer's been very excellent kind of taking that. I love this story, so I don't mind continuing to tell it. But I met Spencer through mutual friends way back then. But we were like in the same gate flying out from Gen Con back to Los Angeles because he's LA based as well too. And he kind of just approached me at the like at my bench, like when I was just sitting at my gate, and he's like, "Hey, you know, I don't know if you remember me, but my name's Spencer. You know, we have friends who know each other." And at that point, like, I was kind of used to just being approached, even if it was just for, "Hey, you know, I loved your work on Geek and Sundry," or "Hey, you know, loved you on King of the Nerds," or whatever. So, but I had been a long week at Gen Con, so I was kind of having to say, "Okay, yeah, no, hi, nice to meet you," you know, situation. He wanted me to pitch him his game, and I was like, "Oh, okay, all right, breathe, let's look at this." Because, you know, you never know, right? So I go and sit with his game, and we talk about it. And it was very generic. It was basically just like a little bathtub game that was supposed to encompass all these different genres. And I was like, okay, well, that's fine. You're not doing a whole lot of things that are new, though. And so we just kind of started talking about, like, what makes for immersive game design. How can you take emotions and convert them into mechanics? And some of the things I was citing were games like Dread or Ten Candles, or even like, you know, Monster Hearts, which has that thread mechanic, which isn't physical. You mean you can literally lay threads out if you want to, but still, that just visceral idea of tying people together was very immersive. So, and I said, you know, I'm not really interested in this, but, you know, if you have anything else, let me know. You know, good luck. And so he got on the plane, he told me later, and started like doing things with cards and dice, like on his tray table in his flight, and just like started doofing around with it. And he just started stacking dice randomly. And he's like, "Okay, that feels good." And then he built Icarus, and I saw it 2 weeks later, and we signed him for a deal. So,
jeez.
And so when he obviously told me later, when we were doing a playtest, or not a playtest, but when we were doing like an event with Alamo Drafthouse with Icarus, and he told me he had something else he was working on, I was like, "Yeah, dude, like, show me what you got." And that ended up being Alice is Missing. And so we're very proud of him, and we did not have a huge expectations because it's such an indie game that's an original concept, and this idea of like texting, we knew people were either going to love it or they are going to hate it. So, you know, so far, at least, as if the Kickstarter shows any interest, you know, we've got at least almost 5,000 people who are very interested in this concept.
It feels very reminiscent of Ten Candles, and that's what I really, you know, it caught my eye in that aspect.
Well, it's so funny too, because Spencer added a voicemail element that happens at that has a similar play from Ten Candles, where, you know, usually you record like the message and then you play it afterwards, right?
Right.
As part of Ten Candles, we have Alice is Missing does a similar thing where you record a voicemail to Alice, and at the end of the game you get to play the voicemails over again. It's the last time you called Alice, what's the voicemail that you left her, kind of a situation. So trust me,
it's amazing how truly emotional and how almost perfect tabletop is for conveying emotion. Because even with the voicemail, where you as a player are at the beginning of the story and at the end of the story, is it's oceans of difference.
Oh, I love the contrast. Like, that's my favorite part about that specific mechanic, where you get to have something at the beginning that you that kind of is a snapshot of where you are emotionally in the session, right? And then being able to contrast that with the very end, where you get to now narratively look at that. And it's so, like, the reason that Ten Candles does it and it does it so well is because it's horror, right? You always know you're at the best part of the session at the top of the game. And so having that contrast after everyone has died is just so, it's powerful. It does exactly the job it's supposed to, which is show you where you were at the beginning of the session. So
now, what is your specific role with Hunters Entertainment?
So my official title is the partner, head of publishing and media. So, and what that basically means is that I basically oversee most of the things that aren't direct development. And that part's overseen by my business partner, Crystal LaRosa. So we kind of started this company almost 10 years ago. Actually, it will be 9 years as of this Gen Con. So, or is it the 10 year? Oh God, it was 2010 or 2011 that we did our Gen Con for the first time. We started this company almost 10 years ago, if not 10 years ago, just with a little, you know, we basically, my buddy had created a Resident Evil like RPG, because we all played role playing games in college and he was kind of like our resident DM. And at the time we were all super obsessed with like Max's Brooks zombie survival plan, or the zombie survival guide, excuse me. The remake of 28 Days Later and like Dawn of the Dead. I'm sorry, not the remake of 28 Days Later, just 28 Days Later and the remake of Dawn of the Dead. and so we were just immersed in zombie culture at that time. And so we wanted to make a game that like truly tested your zombie survival plan the same way that Max Brooks made you rethink your zombie survival plan in his book. And we came up with this game and we were like, okay, all right, well, let's do this. Let's make it. And so we started into it. And I remember specifically meeting with all the people who were involved in it at the time. It was the three of us. Again, we all went to college together. And being like, okay, guys, I paid our deposit to go to Gen Con. We're going to go to Gen Con, so we have to have a book done by then. So we rushed
no pressure.
That thing. We got it all done, and I kid you not, the books arrived in a pallet in Indianapolis from the printers by the skin of their teeth. And we made it. But this was pre-Kickstarter. This was pre-anything else. So we took out a bank loan to do this, basically. And
that's scary.
And it was terrifying, right? But thankfully, that first year, like, we sold half of what we brought. You know? And for a first-time publisher who had no ideas, numbers, quantities, anything like that, I think we – and this was also, you know, we were literally just taking cash. We didn't even have card, really. Like, we had limited card functionality, but we were primarily, like, a cash booth in 2010, 2011. And we were in Entrepreneur's Alley, which I think was like one of the first years Entrepreneur Alleys was existing in Gen Con. So, and another fun fact, we were right next to Stoneblade, who also started for the first time that year. So we were right next to them as well too. And they had it was the first year Ascension was. So we were like, it was like Outbreak Undead and Ascension right next to each other.
It was a very different time. And then you blink. And you're raising hundreds of thousands of dollars for Altered Carbon.
With backer kit, including shipping, the whole project ended up being around $500,000 in pre-orders.
Ooh. In
the day. So yeah, again, a huge portion of that is shipping, just to be fair. True. But yeah, and that's our first license. That's our first like real license, and thankfully. Thanks to our partners with Renegade Games, it could be a Netflix property. So, and speaking of which, that sucker is out to the printers as well too. We're just looking at should we be expecting the proofs in just like a week or so? So we're prepping the whole thing for drive-through to get up on so that we can serve our backers the PDF of the book here very soon.
Oh, that's fantastic. So did you guys reach out to Skydance, or did Skydance reach out to you guys for?
So another funny story. so many stories. So a good buddy of mine, Joe LaFave, who is responsible for like Dune and Alien and brokering these large, large media companies. We had met at Gen Con. Chris and I had met him at Gen Con through a mutual friend, and we hung out at. A local game store in Indianapolis at their bingo night or their trivia night. And we bonded over that. We were just like drinking and making a mess and having fun. And we had such a good time. So when we got back and found out that he was an LA local as well, too, that we just said, okay, well, let's start the conversation about licensing. And we were still very much like a two-product company, like Outbreak Undead and Kids on Bikes at that time, right? And so we kind of just kept up the relationship, even though there wasn't anything really actionable. But, you know, we kind of helped each other through the time. And then we were said, okay, well, we're going to go try out for Dune and see if that happens. Cause we had heard it was available just like everybody else in the industry, or like everybody knew in the RPG industry that Dune's on the table. So everyone submitted for it, including us. But I had no idea that Joe was involved in that process until the press release came out. And I remember like giving him a little bit of like hell for it. I'm like, oh, Joe, if only I'd known, you know, oh, it could have been so good. And I mean, there wasn't any serious ribbing, but we were just kind of having fun for it. And we were like, oh, okay, well, that's fine. I mean, good. Good for Gale Force 9. I'm sure they're going to do great stuff with it. And then, you know, knowing that they sub-licensed it out to Modiphius. But then Joe was like, okay, well, I mean, what do you think of Altered Carbon? And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. I read those books in college. Super fun cyberpunk world. Totally into it. Are you saying that it's available? And he's like, yeah, it's available. They're actually accepting pitches right now. And I'm like, all right, we put it on the table. And at that point, we had actually submitted to a few other licenses as well, too, and been just flat out turned down. So, you know, we didn't really go in there with a whole lot of high hopes because, you know, we were still a relatively new company. We hadn't had any licensing experience before then. We knew that Renegade was a very powerful distribution partner. And then, you know, their team had done licensing before, but we were going to be doing the development on it. So we didn't come in with a lot of high hopes, but Skydance really liked our team and they really liked our vision. And they really liked that Chris De La Rosa, my business partner, had worked for a graphic design company that made the billboards and marketing assets for Altered Carbon as part of his day job in prior circumstances as well, too. So he had some prior experience with the license, and that always helps as well, too. So, you know, yeah, a lot of inside baseball. This is all business pig stuff I'm giving you today, man. So,
hey, you know what? That's what I'm here for. I love the classic LA story of, you know, it truly comes down to I knew a guy, and it's a lot of funny that. Just how it's always enforced. Every time I talk to someone from an LA, it's enforced.
Well, and it's very much, so here's another thing, though, too, especially for the LA hopefuls. It's like, because they do say, oh, it's about a guy you know. There is also those people in the circuit who are trying to actively climb up the ladder, and you can see them trying to do it. So what I like to say is that there is no luck in this world. There is simply opportunity and preparation. So if you prepare yourself to get ready for opportunity, when it comes, you go for it. And a lot of people on the outside can look at that and be like, oh, man, you're so lucky that you got this, or you're so lucky that you got that. Well, you know, luck, there is an element to it, but really it was opportunity plus preparation. I mean, we spent, like I said, most of their time of this company having it be a nights and weekends endeavor in which we just worked other jobs in other various forms. You know, I remember cutting our first radio commercial for Outbreak Undead while I was working as an assistant editor, and I had access to a voiceover booth, and I asked the script producer at the time, I'm like, and because we were staying up late waiting for a render anyway, I'm like, hey man, do you want to record this radio script for my role-playing game? Would you be willing to do that? And he's like, yeah man, sure. So I throw him in the booth, I record it, and I cut it while I'm waiting for this render to happen. And that's how we got like a radio commercial that we put in front of the We're Alive podcast for Outbreak Undead. So it's just little things like that where you're just always being sincere, humble, and driven, right? Like don't mistake driven for being aggressive and cutthroat. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because right. It's easy to. It's easy to just say, okay, well, who can I sacrifice to grow in the world? But if you grow because you're helping other people grow in the meantime, then everyone wants to rise up together. So the mantra I've used that kind of exemplifies that is that by allowing others to shine, you as a result shine just as bright, you know?
I love that.
Yeah. So it's good. It's, it is nice. It's like, and it was good that, you know, those relationships that we built were mostly from a friend basis and then grew into opportunities because we all enjoyed working together, kind of a situation. So, you know, yeah. Yeah.
Is that something that you have kind of chipped away at and honed at over the years? Or is it like one day you woke up and, you know, that was the realization that you had is, you know, because you're such a, you know, a genuine and a humble and hardworking individual, that you saw your relationships and your projects blossoming because of that kind of behavior?
See, if that kind of behavior was exemplified because I was seeing that it was getting results, then that would kind of be the wrong reason to do it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Okay.
You try not to do these things because they give you a leg up. It helps when everyone helps. And there is always going to be a situation where, you know, you give out 100 handshakes, but you only remember the one slap, you know, kind of a situation. But there's that point too, where you just, you can't stop because of the one slap. You know what I mean? And there'll be an opportunity in the future where, and I think I was given some good advice in which someone, I can't even remember who said at this point, maybe it was someone back in the DreamWorks, when I was working at DreamWorks Animation days, like one of the bosses over there, because this is a very filmic thing, kind of piece of advice, is like, you don't know what PA is going to be your boss down the road, kind of a situation. So the nicer you are to everybody, the more likely those people are going to remember you when you go down the road, you know? So if you belittle someone in a lower position than you, but they grow up in the world and surpass you because they did good work and you might need them one day, it doesn't hurt to show kindness then as a result. Like by being mean to people, you only are generating a thread of toxicity that will eventually pay you back down the road. But if you only initiate threads of kindness, then even if those people do nothing for you down the road, which is more likely the situation than not, at least you'll know that like you did right by them. And, you know, if it does end up working out for you, then great, good. And hopefully you help them. And again, everybody benefits from the situation, you know? And if you mess up, then just own it and move on, you know?
Right. On the same foot, just kind of want to pivot into, these are amazing lessons for, you know, one, the listener, but I can only assume that you're also, you know, you're enforcing these with your own kid. And does your son follow along with a lot of your work? Does he know what you do?
I mean, he's 5 right now, so he knows a little bit about the games and a little bit about some of the studio work and stuff like that. But a lot of daddy's work is very high concept. But he likes to say when I get off things like this, like, "Daddy, how was your call?" You know, and
oh, yeah,
you know, that's we'll cute. Have conversations like that. You know, but I mean, it's a lot to wrap around even for my partner, like a lot of the details of the day. So I don't want to bog down his little brain, who just wants to watch Steven Universe and play on the bed, you know. So keep him protected from some of those things and let him and I enjoy the simple things, the simple pleasures of life.
Over your years of working for Geek & Sundry, Critical Role, Hunters, have you ever found it hard to go from, you know, Ivan, businessman, tabletop board game maker, to, you know, just switching off and just, you know, donning the red cape and running around the house and being, you know, being the superhero for 5 minutes?
I mean, we have a very, Phoenix is actually, my kid has actually enforced the best way to do this. Is he has learned to use our Google Home in such a good way, and he will set a timer. That's what he will do. Like, he'll be like, "Hey, G-Man, set a timer for 30 minutes. And he'll look at me and goes, "Okay, Daddy, it's time to play." So, and we'll play for half an hour, and then we'll go back and he'll set a timer for half an hour or an hour. One time he tried to get me for 5 minutes. I told him 5 minutes, daddy needs more than that to go back to work. So he's very good at enforcing the work, play, work, play. Is that exhausting to, you know, switch that back and forth? Absolutely. But, you know, that's what it is. That's just what it is.
No, I mean, that's cool. I mean, you always hear the story of the kid, you know, buying his dad's, you know, 1 hour worth of time. So, you know, it's cool that you guys have that system where, you know, you can still break away and play just because, you know, the kinetics, especially playing with a kid, can be, you know, super great for creativity, pushing project forward, and just for stretching your legs and getting away from work for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of like a forced break, you know, which the aggressive go get 'em part of my brain's like, no breaks, right? You know, as they say, when you own a business, you usually become your own worst boss, right? So the forced breaks are nice sometimes. Yes. Sometimes I'm like, I just need to get this out and then we can go. So
other than hanging out with your kid, like, what do you still dive into tabletop and board games to have some fun? How do you unwind?
I mean, yeah, that's kind of the challenge right now with everyone in the current, current environment, right? Of forced relaxation. I usually enjoyed, I got my downtime and I recharged my battery by being around people, because I just really love being around people. Whether that was like celebrating a birthday or going out to, you know, go on an adventure with friends, or, you know, just kind of make trouble, even if it was just once a week going out for drinks or whatever. That was kind of my fast recharge, prior to all the COVIDs. But now I'm trying to find new ways to do it. And it's a challenge, I will say. But the things that are still making me happy is we do have we had a pretty regular Gloomhaven session. We were playing with a couple of friends, and we ported that game over to Tabletop Simulator now. When it's doing great, like there's a couple mods for Tabletop Simulator for Gloomhaven that make setup just double click and you set up the whole map, and it's brilliant. So
that's nice.
There's some stellar, like if you go, and I can't remember specifically what it is right now, but I believe it's like Fantasy Setup Gloomhaven. If you go to Tabletop Simulator and then go to the Steam Workshop for it, it's phenomenal. So there's stuff like that. We do have a regular D&D game that we play every 2 weeks on. There's been just a lot of like self-care and just kind of taking care of of our living space and things like that. But I would like to go back and explore some of the hobbies, but I wish there was more time. But unfortunately, the demands are very intense at the moment. And I need to be better about enforcing that kind of self-care where I say, okay, I'm gonna step back and, like, you know, take a weekend in which I turn the phone off and things like that. Which is an admirable thing if you can do it. And it'll get there. I wholeheartedly believe at some point there will not ever be an opportunity that I'll have to actually turn it down, so to speak.
Right. Well, that's, you're in like one of the busiest sessions of 2020 imaginable. I mean, everything's in Kickstarter, everything's in print, everything's coming back live on Twitch. Like everything that you're attached to is activating again.
Yeah, and that's just the stuff I can talk about right now is the challenge. So we are definitely looking. That's the thing, right? We are very excited about some things that are behind the scenes. And yeah, the Twitch channel, like we're definitely, I was very lucky to bring on some people, Markia McCarty, Knox Weiler Burf, to help us launch our Twitch channel, which should be happening sometime here in July. If this hasn't gone up by then, it should be very, very soon. And we're stoked for that. We're building out some show concepts, talking to Twitch, and we're looking forward to like going out there with a real offering, like 20 hours a month of programming offering kind of a situation. So
what all are you guys going to be working to produce on that?
So right now, tentatively, we have two shows that will be Tuesday, and then it will either be, it looks like it might end up being either Friday or Saturday for the second show. And one will be like a circulating carousel live play called Hunters Presents, in which we're just going to be bringing in DMs and like a kind of a quasi house cast of players in which we're going to be playing our games and kind of exploring different things. It's just an opportunity to do live play, showcasing the products. And then we're going to have a more round table kind of discussion with Markia, who's going to be doing the Hunter's Gathering. And that is an opportunity to, like, it's not going to be like, board game news, but it will be an opportunity to, you know, bring developers and talk about projects, talk about game design, talk about all the things that are kind of fun that we don't often have an opportunity to hear about from like a publisher side of things. And those are the two that we've locked down. And then there's one more that we're flirting with right now, but I don't want to give out too much of it yet, just in case things change drastically, which is always the circumstance.
always. So without spoiling anything, are you guys looking to do Sagas, Undeadwood, something like that over there?
Oh God, those shows. I'm Devin, I don't know if I can even communicate to you the cost of those shows.
I can't even begin to imagine.
We're not talking Hollywood money, but we're talking like upper end digital platform money. And the business models that are required to support that level of production requires so much overhead in order to make that work that it is, I can say without a doubt that kind of level of shooting is pretty far away from what we're doing. But should we ever get to that stage, I could spin up one of those shows tomorrow. I know all the people that I would need to do to put one of those shows together. It's just literally about, can the amount of money that it would cost to produce one of those shows support and or raise the same amount of money that it costs to make it? Yeah. And, when your business model is basically I'm selling games to do that, and that involves margins and markups and sometimes royalties, in fact, very oftentimes royalties, you're talking about a lot of units to pay for something like a Sagas of Sundry.
Well, in an ideal world, in 3 or 4 years, once you guys have, built up a really good core audience, is it something that you guys have discussed or just more keeping with the more?
No, it's certainly something to discuss because it'd be fun to do it all again. And, even if things were back to normal, so to speak, right now, like I said, it's a huge endeavor to put that together. So, but with the studios closed and a lot of production being not available because of COVID, it's very challenging right now. Because trust me, there's nothing would please me more than to employ a lot of my close friends who are very, very talented to work on something like this because they don't have a lot of opportunities with the studios being closed right now. But I don't think ethically I could do that safely at this stage. The best I can do is continue to try to make content from home and think about content that would play well from home in a good way. And thankfully, there are people who are, trailblazing this kind of stuff forward. Like CR has got a lot of great, safe at home programming. But even understanding the endeavor that it takes to take that main show of theirs and turn that into social distancing safe, it's just very involved. It's very, very involved. So right now, it will mostly be Mortises and Skype. And if I can continue to plug away some glorious interactivity, which is 100% the goal, then I will continue to do so because I think it's worth it. And I think it will be amazing if we pull it off like that.
You've got Alice, you've got Altered Carbon. If you could license any product in the world for tabletop RPG, what would you get your hands on?
That's interesting. It's so funny because the ones I really, I think without giving too much away, let me see. What would I want? Oh, I know. I remember now, and it's impossible. And I've looked everywhere. And if anyone knows how to find them, please let me know. But Pirates of Dark Water, that's what I would want. An official Pirates of Dark Water. But there is a fan-made version of it that I have found. But if someone wants to reboot that cartoon, and so I can turn it into an RPG, if someone could do it to it, what happened with like She-Ra and Voltron and some of those other classic reboots, I would be forever in your debt, because I loved that show growing up. It was the perfect blend of like fantasy and adventure and sci-fi in Pirates of Dark Water that I want so bad. And I think it would make an awesome RPG. It has a unique world. And even though there hasn't been a whole lot of characters explored in that, have you seen this show? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have no clue, but I just Googled it and I can't wait to go down this rabbit hole.
It was an animated show that I watched growing up and I loved it. And it was uncompleted, which was the tragedy too. Like even in its, it was way ahead of its time, Devin. It was so cool. We're talking like ElfQuest and Lord of the Rings and Pirates all mashed together into a Hanna-Barbera animated special that had dark water and all this other cool stuff. Like it was like this cannibalistic water that like ate ships and people and stuff. It was so cool.
Oh, okay. So I'm looking at a bunch of Google images and I don't, is it a dragon, a parrot, this little...
Niddler. Niddler was like the parrot, the parrot dragon bird. Yeah. Yeah. Parrot dragon monkey. I think it was a monkey bird. Oh, that's what they called him. They called him a monkey bird. Yes. So
I very vividly, I can see this in my mind. Like I'm sitting on a couch with my brother and there's cereal involved. And this Niddler is on screen. Yeah. Like, wow. That just,
he was the snarf of, the Pirates of Dark Water. He was the clear comedic relief character, so you know.
Gotcha.
But even he had a cool arc, dude, you know. So anyway, I'm obsessed with this show and I hope in my lifetime we'll get to see this thing rebooted in a way, and then I
could be cool
after the license for it. So because a lot of those Hanna-Barbera cartoons are like they're probably under some vault that's lock and key, that's probably with every other Hanna-Barbera license, that's just like in someone's archive at this point. And so getting any licensor to care about it, and even that, even if they cared about it enough to even do the talk with me, it'd be like, okay, well exactly how many people am I going to get engaged with this? Just me. It's just gonna be for me.
So where can we find you amongst the ether on social media?
Oh, well, I'm pretty easy. I'm pretty much Hydra underscore Lord on all of the things. Instagram, Twitter, and on the Facebook, you can just search up my name. That's fine. Hunters Entertainment is where you can find us online, and all the socials there are either Hunters Entertainment or on the Twitter. It's Hunters underscore ENT because someone else took Hunters Entertainment Twitter, but those villains but no, that's pretty much where we live and what's going on, and yeah, man, for taking the time. I hope everything with this works out in a glorious way. I know you're like building up your core here so that you can have a good time with it, but I wish you all the best.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate, especially, I mean, it's been, you know, a few years since we've chatted, but you know, I'm hoping the next time we talk, it's not in 2 years. So
no, I get it. And you said you ended up checking out the not the Never Split the Difference, but the Tipping Point. What did you think?
I am still working through it. It's one of those, like when I'm in the car and driving, and of course with everything going on in the world, it's not a frequenting occurrence.
It's the only way to do it. And yeah, you're not in the car that often. I'm listening to in the car right now. I'm listening to Lovecraft Country presently. So I don't know
if
you've heard of that.
Yes. It's queued up in like 7 different places on my phone, on my computer. I've got the audiobooks, but
It's very good. It's very, very good. And I heard they're turning it into a show as well.
I think it's on Prime right now, actually.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I heard it was HBO, but of course I'm literally hearing my news through hearsay. So probably a quick 5-minute Google foo would fix that. So
you are correct. It's HBO and August 16th is the first episode.
Wow. Wow. I mean, good for them. I bet you it was one of the last shows they were able to shoot before everything started shutting down and they were just been in post with it this whole time. But still, that's
probably
super exciting. Well, I mean, it sounds like you had a lot of books to read, dude. So,
yeah, it's the story of my life. Read one, 5 get added to the shelf. And then we can find Alice is Missing on Kickstarter, and then you guys are moving it to CrowdOx, right?
Yeah, so right now it's in the late pledge manager for CrowdOx. You can find that at aliceismissingrpg.com. Pretty simple. The pledge manager for that will be closing very soon because we are going to be submitting it off to printers very soon. But if you are only hearing about it now, feel free to hop over there. If there's still time, grab it. Otherwise, it will be available in the friendly local game stores coming towards the end of this year once the boxes have hit the port and have made it out to backers, so to speak.
Perfect. All right, man. Thank you again for sitting down and chatting with me. And I look forward to having you on the show in the future.
Absolutely, dude. No worries.
Thank you for catching this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is part of the Bard Podcast Network family of shows. You can find all of our shows, some swag, tabletop add-ons, and so much more over on our website, www.thebardpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media at Bardic Babble Pod, pretty much anywhere. Oh, and be sure to rate and review the show wherever you might be listening. It helps us to beat the algorithms and get the show out to more folks. So, until next time, my name is Devin, and I can't wait to share the next story with you.